Chapter 2. A Golden Capture. Sherlock was keen to learn more about what happened afterwards, as he believed more serious issues were involved in the case. Jabez was annoyed at the joke being played on him and the loss of his salary. "You are richer by more than £30, and you have gained excellent knowledge on subjects beginning with the," insisted Sherlock. "Your complaint is unnecessary." Then Sherlock began to ask about Vincent, the assistant. "I didn't know what was on his mind, but he asked about how he found Vincent, why he chose him, and why Vincent agreed to low wages. Then he urged Jabez to tell us more details of his appearance. He's small, quite large, about 30, Jabez declared before adding, "and he has a scar from a splash of acid on his forehead and pierced ears." Suddenly, Sherlock stared at him closely, and I realized this was crucial information, a detail he recognized. "Is he still with you?" Jabez told us that he had just left Vincent and added that he had taken good care of business while Jabez had been working at Fleet Street. "Right, I have complete faith that we will reach a conclusion by Monday, Mr. Wilson. You can leave now." Once Jabez had left, I questioned Sherlock about what we would do and how he planned to solve it by Monday, as it was all so extraordinary. He seemed to believe this assistant was involved, but it wasn't obvious to me. The more mysterious and complicated something appears, the more normal and obvious it often turns out, Sherlock answered, "but this does need some rapid action from us." Immediately, we set off towards Jabez's pawnbroker's shop in Saxe Coburg Square. It was not the business of a wealthy man, with its dirty bricks, faded sign saying a Jabez Wilson, pawnbroker, and a little patch of grass at the front. Sherlock banged heavily on the pavement 3 times with his stick before he knocked on the door, and a young, bright-faced man emerged and asked how he could help. Sherlock asked for directions to the Strand, which the man had provided. "Smart fellow, that," observed Holmes. "I would judge that he is the 4th, perhaps 3rd, most intelligent man in London." I resisted the urge to ask Sherlock to explain himself and said, "I suppose you just wanted to see this assistant who somehow seems involved in this red-headed league business. But why did you bang the pavement?"
"I just wanted to observe his knees, not him.
As for the pavement, simply observe.
We don't need to talk yet. Let's have a look around us."
We took the road around the corner from Jabez's pawnbroker shop, which led onto a much wealthier street with fine shops, a newsagent, the Coburg branch of the City and Suburban Bank, and several restaurants. Sherlock seemed satisfied with the progress, although I was still trying to figure out what we were doing. "This is a serious business," Sherlock explained to me. "A major crime is about to be committed, and I will need your help. Come to Baker Street at 10 this evening and bring your gun. I suspect this will be dangerous work, and it is better if you are armed." Then he left me without further explanation. I had seen what Sherlock had seen, but his logical observation had solved the case while I was still wondering what was happening and asking myself questions. What was happening tonight? How did Sherlock know? Why might I need a gun? When I arrived at 22B, Baker Street, Detective Lestrade and another man were with Sherlock. Lestrade often asked for Sherlock's advice and help. Clearly, Sherlock now wanted some extra force. The other man was introduced as Mr. Merriweather, a City and Suburban Bank banker, and Sherlock explained why they were coming with us. Detective Lestrade has been investigating John Clay, also known as Vincent Spaulding, for a considerable time and would love to capture him. He needs to face justice for murder, robbery, and many other crimes. Mr. Clay is quite remarkable. He is the dishonest son of a duke and someone who went to Eton and Oxford, a man with a brilliant mind and many disguises. Mr. Clay's intention is linked to Mr. Merriweather, as he plans to make Mr. Merriweather's bank £30,000 poorer this evening. I still had more answers than questions, but we did not delay, and soon we were back on the street we had investigated earlier. Our destination was clear, the steps to a cellar under the bank, full of massive boxes. Detective Lestrade had stayed outside Jabez Wilson's shop. Sherlock asked Merriweather to explain why this was a perfect location for the best thief in London. "We are storing a huge amount of French gold here, which we briefly borrowed from the Bank of France to assist us with an investment. It will be returned tomorrow, but it is in those boxes now," Merriweather pointed to them. "So, tonight must be the night," Sherlock explained. "Have your gun ready, Watson."
men will do a lot of harm for £30,000. In the damp and dark cellar, we waited and waited, Sherlock, Merryweather and me. Finally, after several hours, a light appeared from below between the stones of the floor, and suddenly, one large floor stone lifted, a hand appeared, then a body, and we heard voices. In the light of their lamp, we saw a boyish face, John Clay, and moments later, he began to pull up a small, red-headed man, also known as Duncan Ross. That was when Sherlock attacked, throwing John Clay to the floor and pulling his arms behind his back before putting on handcuffs. "Don't bother trying to escape, Clay," Sherlock warned him. "Dr. Watson here has a gun. Your pal, also known as Duncan Ross, won't get far. Detective Lestrade and his inspectors will meet him at the other end of your tunnel, back in the cellar below Jabez's pawnbroker shop." "Don't touch me with your filthy hands," Clay objected. "I come from royal blood, so remember to address me as sir." "Right, your royal highness, time for a trip to the police station, sir, and a nice long stay in prison at Her Majesty's pleasure," Sherlock answered. As Sherlock had predicted, the crime was solved by Monday. Just after midnight, Sherlock provided me with all the answers to my many questions. It was obvious the Red-Headed League was an invention, and somebody always meant Jabez Wilson to get this job. His assistant, Vincent Spaulding, ensured he saw the advertisement, and Duncan Ross ensured he got the job. There had to be a reason for Vincent taking such a low wage, and that description of him reminded me of a man whom I had heard about for a long time, the dangerous Mr. Clay. These two were the fellows behind everything, and the plan had to be worth much more than the £4 a week that the League was paying him. The encyclopedia copying was pointless, except it kept Jabez from his business for 4 hours a day for 8 weeks.
Why was that?
Sherlock then referred to our visit to Jabez's business. He had banged the pavement to check if the cellar was at the front or back of the building. It was at the back. Vincent, the photographer, was highly interested in the cellar, and then we just had to see what was behind the shop. It was the bank, and 8 weeks was enough time to build a tunnel from the cellar on the square to the bank cellar. A visit to Mr. Merryweather confirmed what the pair were planning to steal, and now I knew they only had one day left, Sherlock outlined his observations. I calculated they must be coming tonight. It's all quite simple and uncomplicated, as I said it would be. Sherlock sat back, relaxed. He was never happier than when he was solving crimes. Solving the puzzle was the primary victory, even more important than catching and punishing a dangerous criminal like John Clay.